Let's start with the waters thing first. The government's new three water scheme is out. Our council did sign up to the previous version. Does that automatically mean we're into this one, or is it like a level playing field again?
So I think I can answer that. We're going to play a bit of a team tag between Keith and I. So when it gets complicated and into the infrastructure side of it, he's our expert. Our council's always been signed up for three waters. We've been reforming and evolving our waters for a long time. And so, yeah, when you sign up or not sign up, we've been proactively going down that track of reforming and improving our three waters for many, many years.
Okay.
So there's no real change to us in terms of that sort of landscape. It's really, you know, when central government tells local government, and we're delegated under the Local Government Act to do what they say, basically, you know, then we're following those procedures, but we're happy to do that. We've always felt the need to improve our underwater infrastructure as well as our stormwater and potable water.
So I take it from that you're okay with the new scheme as well then?
Well, there's no real change. It's just made it more simplified, if I understand it, as it's made it more localised and regionalised as opposed to the bigger entities. We're still a regional entity number two. So there's not necessarily significant changes in terms of practice making it a little bit more local, which was some of the issues for other councils.
One article I read said that it would be possibly more expensive for ratepayers, this scheme. Is that what you got out of it, and how do you feel about that?
Well, we can only really look at what we do in our own council and our own long-term plan. Our last one, if you look at it, which is all public documents, is we were already segueing, you know, up to tripling the targeted rates for people who are reticulated into, or people who are connected to waters. That's reticulated, and try not to use the council speak. So if you're connected to waters in Waikato District Council, we have a district-wide targeted rate. And our long-term plan, our previous one, we were looking at up to a tripling to a quadrupling that targeted rate with the necessary improvements to all of our infrastructure. We've always felt and seen that with the reform and economies of scale, with the bigger entities, that we can actually have those lower costs to ratepayers. So my understanding is, obviously, the bigger the entity scale is what, you know, the economists or accountants would tell you, then the better the economies of scale. So the smaller the entities, then there's still economies of scale, but perhaps less.
Okay.
So, you know, that's really an accounting financial background, but still in terms of having a region that's working together, then absolutely there's economies of scale that we can get things done and also then fund them and also therefore make it cheaper for our ratepayers than we're already looking at.
So I think the minister said that there are 10 entities from memory, was it 10 or 11, something like that,
yes,
that they would still be able to group together after that if they wanted to make bigger entities. Would you guys be interested in that?
Well, it's not at the moment. It's still, I'm going to use a word pun here, it's still a moving story, right? You know,
yeah.
Minister McInulty has also said he's also asking for feedback from all of the councils.
Yeah.
A lot of the councils, including us, are really looking at the opportunities and ramifications. Obviously, for us, we're always open for partnership, and we proactively show that in all aspects of what we do in our business and progressively do that. But also, we're, number one, wanting to look after our 90,000, we're touching 90,000 ratepayers. So we're looking at that in terms of what's best for us, but obviously working with the partnerships in our region is also a good part for us. But you remember also in our North Waikato, but we've got a 30-year contract with Watercare, which is also part of number one area for our water services. So I guess we're kind of having quite a holistic view of the water's infrastructure and how it will work now and into the future, and we're still in that assessing stage for us.
Now, there had been concerns first time around about, one phrase is democratic representation, the ability for public to connect and communicate their concerns to the four entities. Has having more entities made that easier, or are there also more or different regulations that would allow that as well? What do we know about that?
Well, we've got the regional voice and local voices improved, which I think that's, and it's really good that central government is listening to the voices. You know, that's what democracy is about, isn't it? So the entities are going to be owned by the councils on behalf of the public. The entity board is, well, our one is the regional two, which is our Waikato region. But they will have a professional board, and members will have votes on that. So there'll be a professional board based on competency. So, you know, there's a governance and then there's operational. Then, of course, obviously, there's votes for each mayor And then for every vote of a mayor, there's a Mana Whenua vote as well.
So how many councils are there in the proposed entity for our area?
Keith?
Ten.
So that, it's basically the Waikato Regional Council boundary, I think, looking at it, isn't it?
Yes. I think that's what they've done at the moment for the whole of the New Zealand, is to do it on a regional basis.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Keith, maybe a question for you. Mayor Jackie was talking about the increases in the rates that were going to have to be coming up soon. I believe it's the case that the Three Waters infrastructure around the country has not been, well, councils, no council anywhere has really kept up with the maintenance required or the renewal that's required. Do you want to put that in perspective for me?
I'm not sure that no council's kept up with the maintenance. I think that would be an unfair...
Yeah, that was probably the wrong word. I just meant like renewal for the future, I guess.
So when you're looking at population growth within areas, the assets and infrastructure and the technology adopted is no longer satisfactory for the population served and for the environmental risk that that water treatment delivers back out by the way of a discharge.
Yeah.
So investment needs to be given into technology that protects public health and the environment, and that's really the nub of it. Ponds work well for villages. We are no longer a lot of small villages. We are significant townships and cities.
Yeah, yeah, and I know for our community here in Raglan in the township, we already went through about 5 years ago. Basically, I think the ratepayers are relatively keen to spend a bit more money because we could see surge spilling into the harbour quite regularly. But then we've still been left with a system where there are a lot of, they used to call them manhole lids, sitting around basically near the high tide mark all around town. That's, given what we're expecting with climate change, that's not really a long-term solution, is it?
Yeah, I'd like to give a bit of answer to that to Aaron. And as Keith said, and he can pick me up on the technical things as well as the overall situation of waters, is, yeah, I guess, you know, for probably many years, like in Raglan and many places, we've walked past these things in our lives and not even really thought about them. But as we've become more aware of our environment and the kaitianga of and care of our environment, then we've expected more capability and a better standard of service. And then each consent comes up, there's a high level of service expected from us, which is good, because we want to evolve and get better. So we're seeing becoming more aware of things like, I'm going to call them people holes rather than men holes these days.
Yeah.
Or some other thing. But you're right.
Access lids.
That's no. So the manhole. So those are the sorts of things where each consent has a higher level of service, which is more expensive, but it's also better for our environment. So it's kind of like there's an evolution of technology, there's an evolution of population, there's evolution of retrospectively, and I believe for me personally, when I see it as well, is looking back on how we did things and we could have done them better, or that was the standard of the day.
Mm.
And therefore we have to then upgrade it. So there's a lot of that as well going on at the same time. So for lots of different reasons, we it's a lot of impact, which costs a lot of money.
So Keith, back to the technical aspect of the question, is it going to work for us having these access, the piping network, the sewage network running around near the high tide mark in our community? Or correct me if I haven't quite got that right.
Yeah, look, I think as Mayor Jack, she just said, you know, looking at the manner in which networks are developed and over time, historically we have those networks, and unless we're going to relocate our wastewater treatment plant or relocate networks, maybe relocate housing, then those networks remain in play. There are ways of sealing manholes that stop water infiltration. So I think, again, it's about utilising technology to adapt to climate change, rather than just saying that's no longer relevant. I think we can deal with it in other ways that will give us the benefit that we all need while securing the infrastructure and the performance of that asset.
Okay, all right. So maybe we won't have to put a whole new network in or put a lot of pumps in or something like that. Okay.
Aaron, I guess on that, you know, obviously there's still good checks and balances in with local government as well. we listen to the democracy of the people and bring that into it, and the technology and the sophistication of our experts like Keith, but also, and then compliance. So there's a good, really good checks and balances to always go forward and progress in this area, right? But also, we also got to balance that with the affordability and the capability, you know, capacity over time to do that work. So, you know, we want to make sure that we can do the best fit for service as we can at the right time for the people, and to make sure that we have them safe and healthy, and that they've got good waters.
Okay. Sort of one last question in that area. We're currently working on, for our area, the land-based sewage treatment, and that's progressed but not nowhere near finished yet. I think working everything out, like the location even, has not been confirmed. But are you guys still committed to that?
Yes. So we're currently going through the research involved in land disposal. We've identified land that may be suitable. We're currently doing geotech studies and ensuring that the land can accept treated effluent in quantities. I will say, though, it's a slow process because we need to go through that democratic process.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of discussion that has to happen, a lot of engagement with the community. We meet on a monthly basis with the community. So we have a regular catch-up session, and we just talk about where we're at, what the considerations are, and people get a chance to raise questions and concerns. And so we'll continue to do that until we get through to the end of this process and understand where we've arrived together and what those solutions look like.
Okay. Now, this does kind of segue into another question I had, which was, Jackie, I'm always asking you about a structure plan for Raglan. And
yeah, can I ask, so Joy, before we go into that?
Yeah, sure.
I'm actually texting you because I love technology, don't you? I'm actually just sending it to you because I know that you can help with your listeners.
Listeners.
I've just sent you tomorrow night. Look, we love engagement. The more people that are involved and understand the process, the better. So just encourage that. What Keith has referred to is the wastewater treatment plant group. It's a Teams meeting. It's actually on tomorrow night. So I've just sent you the link. I think that's what that ping was.
Yes.
Sent you the link at 7 to 8pm tomorrow night, just for an hour. And I've got anyone who's interested and can come along and participate, ask questions. And obviously then they're on the database for the ongoing information, and probably to get a catch-up because it's also on our website. So there's lots of information around Raglan specifically and all our wastewater treatment plants that we're upgrading and developing at the same time. But absolutely the website, but tomorrow night you can actually get online and talk to the experts and be part of that group.
Okay. All right, so the question I wanted to segue to was about, Jackie, I'm always asking you about for a structure plan for Raglan, because there isn't one, and I know with this particular land-based sewage treatment at the moment that a recent community board meeting staff were saying part of that they've got to work out how to pump the sewage to the location of the land-based treatment, and normally you would put, my understanding is normally you'd put a pipe like that under a road so you can always get access to it rather than through where people might eventually build houses, but no one knows where the road's going to go. If we'd had a structure plan for the community, would we have had answers to that question instead? Because instead they're going and doing some research at the moment about where they think a road might go through that part of our what is currently a rural community.
Well, part of that, I can't talk from the actually for the water pipe treatment point of view, but from a structure plan point of view, a couple of things. One, there is no budget at the moment for Raglan in our long-term plan budget for a structure plan. But also, we've got, remember, that we've got a lot of other levers that council uses. It's not just, it's a lot more multi-use rather than we've got to have a structure plan that will fix the problems and make everything easier, because we've got the district plan. We've got our growth strategy 2070. We've got the understanding in our strong partnership with your mana whenua and with local everybody in Raglan, as well as with the community board, which you have a fantastic community board, and the avocational councillor. Lots of you've got blueprints. So all of these things have layered up to help us understand. And then we've got roading and infrastructure and all those other plans that are already in place. So there's lots of things around Raglan that are focused on what's the best outcome overall. So it's not necessarily a structure plan that will actually deliver an overall. There's already those layers in place around the planning.
So we've had the experience that I mean, a lot of the planning for new subdivisions in Raglan's basically come about because someone's decided to develop a particular area. And this is not having to go at developers, that's what they do. But the community was kind of left out of that, and I think the community would like to have a say in it. You say it's not in the LTP, but the LTP has been renewed this year, isn't it? Or what do you call it, a review?
Well, I actually understand exactly what you say, because I thought before I was in council that council plans towns, for example, all right, which is really what you're doing, whether we call it a structure plan. Let's call it a big, perfect plan for ideally how a community and how we think good planning should be in a town. But what I realise is actually, as you actually said yourself, is the land is owned by different property owners. So even the best planners in the world can come in and with the biggest, best consultation with any community and plan what they'd like to happen. But unless they all own that land and then can then design it all together, then it's up to the individual property owners to develop their land within the frameworks of some of the planning. And even that then, sometimes people do things under the Resource Management Act where they've got a private plan change. And an example would be Lakeside Development in Te Kauwhata, where we didn't plan growth next to Te Kauwhata Township, but then someone comes in and buys land and they come through a private plan change process and go through a consent process, which is legitimate, and then they build a lot of houses, basically another town.
We are familiar with that.
It's a bit like filling in a jigsaw puzzle with developers, as you say, it becomes developer-led. Now, obviously, some developers, as you said, are more engaged earlier on with community and to a big extent, and others tend to row their own canoes, and that's, I guess, the difference on their style. What we try to do in council is, whenever we're in touch bases with them, is to encourage them to, you know, be as collaborative as possible and as early as possible with the communities. But it is a bit like once we've put a plan in place, whether it's under structure plan or district plan or under our blueprints about where we think things should be together, it's then the jigsaw puzzle of different people planning their business and development at different times in that jigsaw puzzle.
I was just going to say, we are familiar with the private plan change because that's how Rangatahi was developed. But yeah. Keith, maybe a question for you, kind of a more generic one. Would you, when you were going to do something like, okay, we're doing this land-based treatment and now we've got to put a pipe through rural land that will one day be developed, is generally speaking a structure plan something you would look at in, as part of that process of figuring out where to go?
It's outside of my pay. Great.
I was trying to ask it in a way that you wouldn't contradict your mayor.
for us planning, generally we work with the assets the council's currently has. So we look at the corridors and the accessways that are already in play. Generally, we don't travel across green fields. We're always in a brownfields environment.
So that means, what is the difference between green and brownfield for those who don't know?
So greenfields is undeveloped land, brownfields is land that's being developed or has the ability to change into something else.
Okay.
So in this case, I'm going to sort of change your terminology if I may.
Yeah.
The sewerage pipe. Sewerage is generally the wastewater pipe that goes to the plant. So we in this case are looking at treated effluent. So it's a high quality water that we're looking to dispose of to land. On that basis, actually, the pipe becomes a lot smaller. It's a pressurized pipe, and can travel in any direction. We're not reliant on gravity to get it to its location. So part of that is really just looking at where the land that can accept that treated effluent is, and what's the best route in order for us to get there. And it may be the shortest route. It may be the most convenient by the way of the carriageways and an existing infrastructure.
Okay, all right. So we don't have an answer yet exactly where it's going anyway, so I guess we're left with that sort of set of predictions. Can we talk about the civil defence issues? Everyone knows about what happened civil defence-wise in Auckland over the last few months. Reports come out with lots of suggestions for what Auckland Council should do. Do you reckon some of those might apply to us?
Sure. At the moment, staff is looking at that. That was actually around the anniversary weekend storm, not the Cyclone Gabrielle.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's all around, you know, and obviously some of those, so what staff at the moment are going through, the 107 pages and just checking for any extra things that we can pick up that are not localised to Auckland specifically that we can pick up, and it continue to evolve what we're doing in terms of our processes. But we're escalating and have been for a long time around our climate change and resilience in our communities.
Okay, so the things that kind of happened around the anniversary weekends was around communication, and it feels like your comms department needs to be suddenly ready to go into action at any moment. I guess we all know that now, don't we, really?
Sure, that's a conversation at the moment. I guess in terms of a new mayor, one of my mandates was to improve, and that's about capacity, right? You know, it's affordability and having more people on the ground, and in some ways, particularly in that comms area, to have more communication in all aspects of our business with our communities. So I saw that as really important to develop, particularly in this time now of information technology. So then, and as you say, when it comes to some around resilience and emergency management, we see when you've got as much capacity as you need, rather than trying to always do the, you know, really the minimum to keep the costs down, you know, when that's of high value. Our council's been showing, we haven't got into long-term plans, so we're not like flagging spending lots of money on communication more than we are, but we are flagging as a council being really supportive around those communication strategies and making sure that communities are as well informed, whether it's in an emergency or whether it's resilience or planning or forward or even our day-to-day business. That's a good sign.
I'm kind of interested in this question because at that anniversary weekend, I actually spent the night in Wellsford trying to come down from up north. It was unplanned. I spent it with 60 or so other people in the Wellsford Community Centre. And the community of Wellsford was actually really awesome. Hats off to them. They looked after us really well. But part of the experience was that, and this is nothing to do with you guys, but Waka Kotahi's information about State Highway 16 through Helensville was incorrect, that you couldn't drive down it. But they said for over 24 hours that you could. That was like my personal experience. And in the end, the way we got out of Wellsford the next day was through the locals told us about a Facebook group that they have in their community, which is just about roading, because they're always having trouble with their roading around there. And it was that social media knowledge that got us out in the end, not the official knowledge. And in some ways that's good, but also in some ways we all know social media were full of vacuum sometimes with useless information or controversial stuff. Does your comms department feel like they're... Is there anything they can do about that, or they just got to work with it and live with it?
Sure, absolutely understand. Yeah, as you say, you're right. In some ways, social media and people on the ground can see things quite quickly in their area. I guess it's identifying and being able to sift through good, robust information and not. But also, I mean, like I live at Port Waikato, and I was actually on my way home for my 30th wedding anniversary that weekend, and didn't get home to my husband.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. And ended up in Pukekohe for the night. It's a similar story, because of the road. Now, I'll give you that as an example as to where what we know and what we feel is it is about building up our community resilience plans and going back to really the basics. Because people want to, I know my personal experience, I know Reagan was exceptional in COVID too. You want to get your information from the right sources at the right time to ensure safety of all. And so the part of the resilience in this is the same thing. Someone might go and say, hey, I've just gone up XY road, you can come up there. But we know that they haven't been checked by the Roading Alliance or the safety of them hasn't been assured. And just because someone can go on their four-wheel drive doesn't mean that my grandmother can drive up on her non-four-wheel drive or whatever. Or maybe someone's saying that, but they haven't got the authority. So what we absolutely advise and underline is, yes, we can take that information from our locals, and that's what the response plans is about, is having the right people in the right places of our communities to put that information as soon as possible and legs on the ground and eyes on the ground into our civil defence centre, and then the comms can be sent out with authority so that people are assured not just of accessibility or whatever, but safety.
Right. Okay.
And then if people are getting more than one message from three or four different sources, it adds to their anxiety and their stress level and confusion. And that's when we have hazards. So sometimes it's like, well, you know, it's better to be safe and have a half an hour later or an hour later that people have to move in their cars to know that they're assured that the authorities have sent through this message. Now, they probably would send it, say, we would then send that through, say, to you, to the community board, who would put it on their Facebook. We'd send it through to you, Aaron, as a radio station that has the credibility, and it would be sent through to Councillor Lisa Thompson as well. And then they would share that to those and spread that word so that it comes from a place of safety and authority and has been checked, and then people know where they're standing from. And then the information can come back through those ways. And again, it just sits at rotating. So that's the best system that we've found. It stopped, and people have come back and said, thanks for that information, because then we know where we are and where we stand, and they can best plan.
Okay. So I see that the meeting's telling me there's only a few minutes left, and I've got a couple more questions. And one of them relating to the civil defence. I've been sitting in this position for the last 10 years watching. I watched a series of council staff come and go in the civil defence area after the Christchurch earthquakes, and there seemed to be commitment to getting a plan developed then, and it seems to have, nothing seemed to happen. And currently our community board is working on a civil defence plan, and I guess sometimes when the staff come and go and nothing happens, it can be because there's not real serious commitment in council to their particular task. So I just want to check that we do have commitment from you guys, from the political level, that we really need civil defence plans ready to go in our communities.
Sure. So, yeah, okay. So I'd say civil defence has been one of my personal, I guess, agenda. It's probably my only agenda since before I came to council.
Yep.
So civil defence is around community resilience. So what I'd say is our council was a lot less sophisticated 10 years ago in terms of its capability than it is now. I think we're becoming more of an exemplar in the Waikato region in terms of what we do. But the resilience for communities, and particularly in emergencies, comes from community-led plans. So the underlying word is community-led plans.
Yeah.
So that means that, and I understand at the moment that there is a really good plan in Raglan, and it's in the process of being updated at the moment. So part of it, when you're talking about, does council committed? Yes, we've been on a whole journey of improving our capacity and understanding of whole emergency management. But actually on the ground, it's the community-led plans. Now, what's happened with this storm and anniversary weekend and the cyclone, people have become more aware on our busyness of all of our days and all our volunteer time and issues is, oh my gosh, actually we need that resilience plan in our community. What does that look like? Where do we go? How do we do it? And that demand has meant that we've actually got a real, really positive avalanche of people wanting more of their community-led plans. Because it's a bit like you can draw hills to water, but you can't make them drink, right, until they're ready. Kind of idea. So we love working with communities on those. So the short answer to this question is that community-led, your Raglan one's being updated at the moment, your community board is doing a fantastic job, and it will be and continue to be evolved. But it's actually held by the community, for the community, and maintained over time and evolved for the community. But we have got extra capability. We've got another person starting who will be helping not just the communities, but also the marae to have resilience plans as well.
Yeah.
And so it'll be an evolving space around that. And also we're also having a communication person helping them to make sure that communications is right. We have a good understanding across that and encourage that resilience on all levels, from the planning and to what else in terms of climate change adaptation, resilience that means for the future.
Okay. All right. And the last question was around the potential Huntley Community Recycle Centre. We love our community recycle centre here in Raglan, Extreme Zero Waste. We think it's fantastic for a community, and we've been hearing for years that they're going to be rolled out some more of these through the district. And I had heard through the grapevine, so I thought while I had you, I would just ask for confirmation like that. There was a hold-up or something. I don't know the details, but is the council still committed to putting a community recycle centre into Huntley is the question?
Yes, the short answer is yes, but there's been change of, it was a sale of Metro to the Green Gorilla, and so there's readjustments of the contracts and readjustments of the site and improvements. And also we've got a Tuaco Youth Recycling Centre being done at the moment. But basically the Huntley Resource Centre will have to be renegotiated with Green Gorilla, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, absolutely, we're looking at that. It's just one of those progress of around solid waste of others.
Okay.
Right? So that's a short answer. There's more detail if you want it, but basically, yes, it's going ahead. It's not stopped. It's not going away.
Okay, and it will be a community-based one like our one is, where it's run from the community rather than a corporate organisation?
As far as I know, I can't tell you exactly. It's just Huntley Resource Recovery Centre.
Yeah.
That might mean better words to you than that does to me.
That just means the stuff's been recycled instead of just being thrown in the ground when they say resource recovery.
What I would say is what we really all love in council, and we've watched really with a lot of intent, and even around that food waste in Raglan is you and Raglan are at the forefront of development of how best for recovery and resource use, right? So therefore, the reason why we want to do that is to use that model as much as we can and learn how to much better with people like who are innovative in Raglan and our other centres in the future as best we can.
Okay, all right.
Other than that, can't tell any more detail. Perhaps you need we need to get our solid waste person in here. But also, I'd just like to say for you and you, as well as the viewers, there's lots of really amazing information that it's actually online now for you publicly, which is goes to the your Raglan Community Board meeting every 6 weeks. They have lots and lots of every 6 weeks, so there's agenda which has lots of really good reports on it. You can skim through those reports online and see a topic and then read up a lot of information on those things. So a lot of it's really encouraging, because I think sometimes we worry about things that are actually in place or we want more information. They're actually there, the touch your button if you've got a bit of that technology. But a lot of those reports we send to all the community boards so that the communities can be involved and understand where that framework is better. So, again, you could go to the Huntly Community Board and get an update in the last probably 6 months as an example.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, well, look, folks, we've been talking to our Mayor, Jackie Church from Waikato District Council, and Keith Martin, the Waters Manager. Keith, thank you for sticking with us there. And thanks for the info this morning. I'll let you guys get off. I know you've both got a busy day ahead at the moment.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your wonderful questions, Aaron. Always a pleasure.